AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the fair. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Let me ting, don't get the valley. It's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the fair. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Let me ting, don't get the valley. It's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power.
LSU with Carter, man. Freaking go! Be lucky we are in the presence of greatness tonight because we have not one but two supers right off the jump. Big shout out to Jared. Big shout out to Julie. Big shout out to Blanche. Three supers right off the jump. We're going to talk about Jace Thomas, Derek Meadows. Also, one very interesting Mason Taylor thing that popped on the interwebs today that he might be just a little underrated on this team. So Blanche wants to talk about Josh Williams. We are going to do that tonight as well. So once again, big shout out to Julian and Jared with the Supers. We're going to get to all your questions. I do want to start with the biggest newsworthy thing because it is interesting. You know, we go live Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then not again until Sunday, right? And on Saturday, you're going to have not one but two players commit, Jace Thomas and Derek Meadows, two polar opposite recruits. I mean, it couldn't be more opposite than these two players. So let's start off with the more popular player, which is Jace Thomas. This is a guy who 99.9% is going to pick LSU on Saturday. This is the type of player that you guys love and that I love. The Louisiana three-star, the most allure of allure recruits that we love, right? Yes, we love high-profile five-stars. Yes, we love four-stars, but it's a Louisiana three-star we fell in love with watching LSU football, right? The Morris Claibornes, the Jacob Hesters, the Justin Jeffersons, guys that are diamonds in the rough. And Jace Thomas got his fourth star from On3, but the other services still view him as a three-star. And he is from, obviously, Justin Jefferson's high school, Destrehan. Also, the great Jordan Jefferson's high school and Ricky Jefferson. And, of course, Kalaj Cobbins is on the team right now. Now, what's interesting, there is another wide receiver. We'll talk about him a little bit later from Destrehan that LSU is somewhat, I say somewhat, they are interested in. But that's not the receiver that we'll discuss now. Here's my final thing on Jace Thomas. He's going to pick LSU, and we'll talk more about him on Sunday. This is a young man that I have been texted multiple times today that LSU is moving into the lead for Derek Meadows. You guys know I don't do the day-to-day recruiting. I just don't. I can't stand it. Notre Dame has been in the lead from start to finish. This has been a Notre Dame recruit. 6'6", 205, wide receiver. He's gotten a few Drake London comps, which I don't quite see. That's a pretty high-profile comp. A first-round wide receiver, obviously went to USC and now plays for the Atlanta Falcons. But Derek Meadows is interesting. LSU has brought in not one but two 6'6 receivers, even though they are more so tight ends, in Kamarion Pipta 2 years ago, and then, of course, this last year, the absolutely wonderful Tre'Davious Green. Some believe that Derek Meadows could grow into a tight end, but 6'6", 205, is very interesting. Now, you take a look at the poll question for our live viewers. If you are just listening to this via podcast, I do want to point out one very interesting fact. And we get new viewers all the time, okay? So I want to share this stat every single time just to let you know that I'm not just pointing him out because he's just an out-of-state wide receiver, okay? Since Terrence Tolliver, I mean, that is such a long time ago. That is coming up on 14 years since this last happened. There's not been an LSU wide receiver outside of the state of Louisiana that has caught 40 passes. Now, think about all the great wide receivers that have come through this program since then. LSU has probably the best track record of all wide receivers when it comes to wide receivers in the NFL. Or even wide receivers in college. And they have not needed a single one since Terrence Tolliver to be a prominent part of the offense. Now, of course, there's Kadron Boone, who caught 26 passes in 2012. You also have a D. Anderson, who caught 20 passes in 2018. But there really hasn't been a prominent one. Now, C.J. Daniels might break that this next year. But he might not. 40 is a pretty high bar to clear, but that's also oftentimes your number one or number two receiver. It's hard to catch 40 passes in a Division I Power 5 school, especially LSU. But they have never, like, really think about that. They have never needed an out-of-state wide receiver. Never. Now, they've had out-of-state tight ends. We'll talk about Mason Taylor coming up in a second. But out-of-state wide receivers, they have not needed it. So it just depends on their plan for Derek Meadows. Go Hard or Go Home says he looked average. I disagree with that because he's 6'6", right? I am willing to sidestep if you're not the absolute most productive guy, if you're 6'6" and you have some athleticism that you can't really find anywhere else. You really won't find other 6'6" wide receivers. And obviously, this is the profile of the recruit that I almost said Tom Brady because I've been doing so much Tom Brady research for the NFL channel lately. But this is the type of recruit that Brian Kelly's recruited, right? He went after Kamarion Pinton late in the process. He went and got Tre'Davious Green. Obviously, I was an in-state recruit. So apparently, LSU has a plan for this type of player. So that's also that aspect of things. So, yeah, I agree with you. You know, when I watched him, I didn't see anything like earth shattering, but I am totally on board if they for sure want him to be a part of this recruiting class. So it's a very interesting recruitment. It kind of, I'm not going to say it came out of nowhere, but I will say Alabama is in the thick of it as well. And Notre Dame is in the thick of it. And anytime LSU can stick it to Notre Dame, well, that gets the fans excited. I don't know how excited it makes Brian Kelly anymore. Now, do I believe he is going to pick LSU? No, I still think he's going to pick Notre Dame. It was a good bit of steam, a higher amount of steam than I normally get from people. I still think he's going to go to Notre Dame. So I say all of this. Yes, LSU is interested. I would also tell you it's not something you should focus too much time on. Now, I want to go to Blanche's Super Chat because he did super. Julie or Jared, get your questions in as well. Who is LSU's best running back and why is it Josh Williams? You know what's interesting about Josh Williams? One of the most interesting sports stories in a long time that's kind of under the radar but kind of not happened in the last 24 hours. So Team USA Basketball, they had a player dropout, and it was Kawhi Leonard, surprise, surprise. We talked about it briefly last night, but, you know, it's Team USA. There's plenty of all-NBA MVP-caliber players that don't make the Team USA roster. Jalen Brunson didn't make the roster. Freaking Jaylen Brown didn't make the roster. Anyone thought it was going to be Jaylen Brown that would take Kawhi Leonard's slot. Jaylen Brown, five-star recruit. Jaylen Brown, NBA All-Star. Jaylen Brown just won the NBA Finals MVP, and he is almost a one-to-one comp of Kawhi Leonard. He's not as good as Kawhi, but over the past couple of years, he has been. But Team USA didn't pick Jaylen Brown. They picked Derek White, who is a sixth man, a rotational piece who just started and was really good for the Celtics in the finals. And Derek White reminds me so much of Josh Williams. Like, if you watch any NBA, Derek White, you don't think he's good at everything, but damn it, he is good at everything. Derek White, pretty good athlete. Derek White can defend. Derek White can drive to the 10. Derek White can hit a three-point shot. He can hit you with the mid-range. He is good at every last little thing. He's not exceptional at anything, but he's good. And Josh Williams, I honestly was thinking about this earlier today. Josh Williams is a perfect comp to Derek White. Is he an NCAA All-SEC level player? No. Is Josh Williams a spectacular athlete? No. But damn it, he is good at every last thing you can ask a running back to do. Does he have breakaway speed? Yeah, he's got some explosive run ability. Can he catch it out of the backfield? Yes, he can catch it out of the backfield. Can he pass protect? Yes. Is he scrappy? Yes. And the main reason why they picked Derek White over Jaylen Brown, even though any rational human being would never take Derek White over Jaylen Brown, is because Derek White isn't a ball hog. Derek White, and nor is Jaylen Brown, but Derek White is content with his role. And the same thing is true with Josh Williams. Josh Williams is probably just as happy when the team wins if he has five carries as he is 20 carries or 10 catches or whatever it is. The dude just wants to win. And to your point, you know, the odds-on favorite, if you were to poll most LSU fans, who is going to be LSU's leading rusher this year? Well, most would say Caleb Jackson, because Caleb Jackson is a far better talent than Josh Williams. It's not even close. He is bigger. He is faster. He is stronger. He's got a little wiggle to his game. But the more you think about it, the more likely it is that Josh Williams is the best running back on this team and will probably, if you add in receptions, snap count, and rushing touchdowns, all of it, it probably will be Josh Williams next year. A year six running back, an adult competing against the boys. So it's very interesting you brought that up. And I was thinking about that earlier. It's like, who is a Derek White? Because it really has been a national sports story that didn't make any sense to me. Why on earth would Grant Hill pick Derek White over Jaylen Brown? And, well, if you know anything about sports, it kind of makes sense when you break it all down. Now, I want to talk about Mason Taylor because he is in the title of the video. It is interesting. If you were to pick four LSU players that would be in the top 100 of the NCAA video game, I think three of the players we would expect would be Harold Perkins, Emory Jones, and Will Campbell. So Will Campbell, as we discussed yesterday, the number two player in the game. Harold Perkins, the number 31 player on the game. Emory Jones, the number 50 player on the game. And Mason Taylor, the number 52, the number 98 player in the game. Now, I think a lot of us would probably pick Garrett Nussmeier. Some might say Caleb Jackson. Some might even say Kyron Lacy. But it is interesting that Mason Taylor gets it. We are talking about the number one run-blocking pro football-focused tight end in the SEC. By the way, EA Sports used PFF metrics when putting this game together, which comes out, I believe, on Tuesday. So maybe Mason Taylor is a little underrated. And it's important to understand what he is and what he isn't. He's not Brock Bowers. He's not a tight end that's going to make you miss. He's not a tight end that's going to break off a long run after the catch. He's just good. He's got good hands. He gets open. He understands the game. Big shout out to Jamal Adams, by the way, signing with the Tennessee Titans. But shout out to Mason Taylor. Maybe he is a little underrated going into next year. It was very interesting. Mason Taylor picked to go to SEC Media Days next week. And then big shout out to Jaden Daniels. Breaking news. The ESPYs voted Jaden Daniels best men's collegiate athlete on the year. Good stuff for Jaden. There was a lot of competition for that this year. He had a bunch of really good male college athletes. You had Charlie Condon. You had Zach Edey. There's a lot of really, really good players. But Jaden won it. Congrats to him. Arch Manning has an 87 rating. Jared pulling out the Chappelle skit. let's go to LA Mom with their super chat. She says, Carter, do I think Josh Williams will get drafted? I really want him to because he's such a team player. Probably not. Year six running backs will probably never be selected in the NFL draft. Now, if you are, you've got to really blow people away. So like Tyrone Tracy, the Purdue Boilermakers, was a draft pick. But then again, he had just started playing running back like 2 years ago. So especially at running back, they want you as young as you possibly can be coming into the league. And yeah, the likelihood Josh Williams get drafted is probably low. But then again, especially if you are running back, where you go matters more probably than any other position. It's probably better for him to be undrafted next year because he can choose where he wants to go. But yeah, I think Josh will be in the NFL next year. I do. I really, really, really do. Okay. Let's go to a few comments here. I don't care about the boot. Jared says, recruit whoever helps us win. Chance says, don't forget Ed Reed, the Destrohan greats. Who can? I was more so speaking like recent guys, but you're all right. You know, if you mention Destrohan, you got to talk about Ed Reed. You know. Jared with another super. There we go. Am I hearing that Chemo is having a great offseason? I actually have heard some good things. So, Chemo Macanale, or Macanioli, the offensive lineman turned defensive tackle. Yeah, you know, there's going to be a transition phase when you're moving to a new position. But, yeah, do I like that an offensive lineman who was a backup is now seriously being considered part of the rotational two deep at defensive tackle? I would be okay with that if I was at Mississippi State or San Jose State. But at LSU, I probably shouldn't be the case. So I don't know if he's really going to play a whole lot next year. But we'll see. You know, I am open to any defensive tackle on the team proving me wrong next year. Now, let's see here. I wanted to bring up this kid's name before I forget it. There's so much recruiting news dropping in the next week. Probably won't talk about DJ Pickett too much today. I'm just kind of that story has been a lot. Let me get to this, make sure I get this correct. Walter Mathis a three-star defensive tackle just got a crystal ball to LSU. Walter Mathis Jr. I've not watched him. I'll pull up his profile, though. This was... very interesting. So, before I share this, he went to Calvary Baptist, and it's not the Calvary Baptist in Shreveport. This is Calvary Baptist Day in Savannah, Georgia. Three-star, 6'2", 285 defensive tackle. And now all the RPMs are going towards LSU. So more than likely, this kid is going to be a part of the class, and you will have a three defensive tackle minimum class for the class of 2025. Walter Mathis Jr. So there you go. Now, Jared, there you go. Big thanks again. What are we giving out today? Oh, yeah, we'll do it again. First $20 Super Chat, Nicholas Brissett. Racy McMath cards. You get to choose. Two good LSU role players. I think Racy's still in the league. Obviously, Nicholas is with the LSU Tigers now. Now, one more thing. And I do feel this is semi-important. So I was on radio earlier today in New Orleans with Mario Harris. And I didn't know he was on location. So there's a guy, he owns a restaurant. He owns two restaurants, apparently. And he said he was a fan of the channel. He was also on the radio. And he said he had the best pizza in New Orleans. So I wanted to shout out the restaurant. I didn't actually ever get the name of the restaurant. But whoever you are, I am down to come to your place and eat pizza. You don't have to tell a chubby guy to come try your pizza. And I am there on site. I do want to point out one thing that's kind of stuck out to me is how much hype Ole Miss is getting. And when you take a look at the schedule matrix, keep in mind, Ole Miss will have to play LSU on the back end of a back-to-back road game, traveling to South Carolina the week before, and then traveling to LSU the following week on the back end of a seven-game stretch with LSU coming off a bye week. Now, LSU might be underweight. They might not be the absolute best team we ever see this year. I still think LSU is going to be good. But they are going to have such a huge rest advantage in that game. And I just keep penciling in LSU winning that game this year. Now, part of the reason why I want to bring that up is Monty Kiffin did pass away, so Lane's father. And Monty was a part of the Ole Miss staff. Monty Kiffin, obviously known for the Tampa 2, for you film nerds out there. That's nothing more I can say. I mean, he's an icon for modern day defense. Here's Jared's super chat question. He says, Carter, am I going to be ashamed of you in a neck brace? So Jared, of course, has had some, he's got some procedures coming up. We're praying for you, my brother. No, I'm not ashamed of you. I have had family members who have had surgery where they've needed to be in a neck brace. It is brutal. Now, Spectrum follows up here. Carter, the problem is Ole Miss plays a very easy schedule up to that point. And to that point, I would agree with you. So once again, I'll put the schedule matrix up. Where I would push back, though, is it doesn't really matter who you play the week before when you have to travel to South Carolina and then travel to LSU the following week. Back-to-back road games are tough no matter who you are and who you play. In other words, we are not going to be getting the best form of Ole Miss. Now, you are right. Their schedule is very backloaded. But what I want you to also realize is there aren't many SEC teams this year that have to play seven games in a row, period, because we are in a double bye week year. Now, coming up, I do have a very radical, and I mean it is a radical solution to college football's major issues that lie ahead. I did not word that smoothly at all. So, obviously, the biggest story in college football this season, and it is by far the biggest story in college football, is the 12-team playoff. I have one minor adjustment I would make to the sport, and that's coming up after this. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. So, college football, yeah, the 12-team playoff, and there is a likelihood that it stretches to 14 at some point. There's already been discussions about it because, well, it makes a lot of money. It really does. So, the two biggest stories, obviously, the first is the playoff expansion, and the second, I think this is also kind of big, what's going to happen to Florida State, what's going to happen to Clemson as far as their futures with the ACC and whatever conference they might go to. Now, what I suggest is adding another college football game to the schedule. Add another regular season game and get rid of conference championship weekend. Now, why do I recommend that? Well, the first thing is if we're growing these conferences to where these conferences are going to have 16, potentially 20 teams in it, well, we've got to stretch the schedule out to make it semi-equitable, right? If we're going to have, you know, bigger conferences, how can you have any type of conference rotation, if that makes sense? You really can. So you're going to have to stretch the season out anyway. The second thing is, if you get rid of the conference championship game, add another regular season to the year. Now, what a lot of people have said that are anti-playoff expansion, I'm anti-playoff expansion, not for this reason, though, is you're already putting so much wear and tear on the student-athlete body anyway. You know, you're playing 15 games already, and if you have an expanded playoff, well, you could be playing 16, potentially 17 games. But with the conference championship game and the teams that are in the playoff, you're already going to have that problem anyway. And I am not sure if you are going to find anybody in this equation that says no to an extra game to the college football season. Are the players going to say no? Probably not. They play so few games already. You only play 13 during the season. What's an extra game? It really isn't as much as you think it is, right? In high school, if you're on a good high school team, and you also have to factor in high schools play on average one competitive preseason game anyway, in high school, you're oftentimes playing 13 games. You play the 10-game regular season, and if you make a run in the playoffs, you're playing three games anyway. Now, once again, that's a lower level, but you shouldn't be playing more games at a lower level than you are at the second highest level you can play. The second thing is it makes up the revenue for the conferences that will be losing the conference championship game anyway. Now, if you were to ask the television networks, would you prefer the conference championship games, or would you prefer one extra regular season game? They would probably tell you, I would prefer one extra regular season game. Now, they would probably not say yes to that if it came down to, would you prefer one extra playoff game compared to one extra regular season game? They would probably take the playoff game. But if you had the extra regular season game, you are adding, what, 60 more games throughout college football for the 120 or so teams? And look, I know this goes against what I have usually said in every format of sports media that I've done. I've said it on sports radio. I have said it, South Carolina radio. I said it when I was at Bleacher Report, when I was still in school, said it at Sirius XM, all that stuff. I am anti-expansion more often than not when it comes to a schedule. But in this case, it makes a lot of sense for all the parties involved. Add an extra regular season game for everyone. Get rid of the conference championship games. So instead of a 12-game regular season, you add 13. Now, what does that do to opt-outs? What does that do to the bowl season? What is bowl eligible? Do you have to be 7-6 to be bowl eligible? Or can you be 6-7 and be bowl eligible? I don't know. But I do think an extra regular season game isn't necessarily an option. I think it's needed. So let me know what you guys think about that. I'm obviously wanting it to happen. Type Y for yes, type N for no. You are pro extra regular season game. Type N if you are against an extra regular season game. Another thing it does is it makes the college football season a lot more compelling for this reason. You are already going to be in a spot with the 12-team playoff where the conference title games don't matter. So why not be proactive and make the final week matter for everyone? Does it matter if they're getting paid? Yeah. I mean, look, if you're telling me I get, an extra game check or extra NIL, or if I'm just getting an extra opportunity to go out there and run with the boys, do it.
Let's see. I got a long message from someone here. And this is from, well, he said to not be named. I'm just going to say your name. It's from Jake. Jake's been a supporter. He said, Carter Knight, LSU fan, I'm tuning in, and here you are with a ridiculous idea. He said, keep me anonymous because I don't want anyone to get mad at me for this. But adding another game to the schedule puts more wear and tear on the body and once again makes the bottom half teams hurt more than the top half teams. Okay. Here's why I disagree with that. And there's more to it. Big Jack. Here's why I disagree with that. Because I didn't say that the game absolutely positively needed to be a conference game. But I would rather it be. I just think another game makes sense. It just does. I also don't think people quite understand how wild it is. And I mean, it is so unfreaking believably wild. The schedule inequities that exist already in the SEC. And I have no idea how they expanded the conference while at the same time made the schedules even less equitable over the next two seasons, which is crazy to me. I think the reason why they did that is because they're adding more teams, or they're open to adding more teams. We say out of pressure. What's up, pressure? Good to see you. Now, one thing I want to mention as well. I got a few people angry at me because every time I see this, I post a video, I'm like, what's up, Garl? Garl, thank you for the super chat. Welcome, Garl, to the channel. Garl, you get to pick the next topic. Go right on ahead. And I got people at my ear. This always blows my mind. It just does. How people are so bad at ranking coaches. So CBS Sports, they did their coach rankings. And I'll be honest, a lot of people in sports media are afraid to do coach rankings because, well, they talk to these coaches quite a bit. Now, I'll be the first to tell you, I don't talk to high-profile coaches every day. Huh? I'm not afraid to admit that. I know a lot of people want to say, well, my sources, I don't want to get a source mad or whatever. But I don't understand how these rankings are so bad every year. Kirby Smart, number one. Yes, anyone that has a brain knows Kirby Smart is number one. Brian Kelly, number two. Yes, I think you would have to put the College Football Hall of Famer, who's won 10 games in his first two seasons at LSU, at number two. Now, was his coaching job this past year his best work? No. But in year one, it was definitely one of his better coaching jobs in his career. Steve Sarkisian, number three. I don't know if I could put Sark number three. Yes, he just went to a College Football Playoff. But number three is kind of rich, right? At Texas? Really? I would have Lane Kiffin ahead of him. I would have Kalen DeBoer who ahead of him, who he just beat in the playoff. But if you're ranking SEC coaches, sure. If you want to put Sark ahead of DeBoer because he's a first-year SEC coach. I just don't understand how Lane Kiffin is not number three, who has won two 10-win seasons at Ole Miss. He's beaten some top 15 recruiters since he's been at Ole Miss. Of course, us last year. But this one never makes sense to me. I never understand Mark Stoops being ranked so high on these lists. Never understand it. Never, ever understand it. Kentucky has been under expectation the last two seasons. Each of the last two seasons. Makes no sense. Makes absolutely no sense. Why would I have Eli Drinkwitz behind Mark Stoops? Eli Drinkwitz just beat Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. Josh Heupel has not just beaten Mark Stoops the last two seasons. He blew him out 1 year. And the year before, Mark Stoops had, or last year, Mark Stoops had a mediocre Tennessee team. And that wasn't a really great Tennessee team last year. Tennessee was on the back end of a back-to-back road game. Mark Stoops was coming off a bye, and he still choked the game away. And then you have Shane Beamer at number 12, who has beaten Mark Stoops each of the last two seasons at South Carolina. I've never understood Mark Stoops. I've never understood it, ever. I think the bottom four here are correct. In some order, I think the bottom four are right. But Mark Stoops, I would probably have like number 11 or 12. But Lane Kiffin's definitely got to be number three. He's definitely got to be number three. And I would probably have Josh Heupel number five behind Lane Kiffin. And then it'd be Sark DeBoer in some order. But, man, I don't know if Mark Stoops knows all these writers or if he has people at CBS. I've never understood that. Let's go to Garl. LSU TAF and Collective, I donated today. If we complain about losing big recruits to NIL, then we got to support. You're right on the money. Look, I'll touch on NIL really quickly. But first, you don't hide my Stoops hatred very well. I do not hate Mark Stoops. I do not. I think what he's done at Kentucky is admirable. I just think it's fraudulent the way people view him. And it goes back to schedule inequity. All right? And I posted a link under the Twitter, under the On3 tweet that had the coaches ranked. And I've had a few Kentucky fans at my neck. But you cannot deny that in four of Mark Stoops' seasons since 2016, his SEC strength of schedule was bottom three in the ACC, Big 12, and Pac-12. Let me repeat. His SEC strength of schedule in four of his seasons was the same type of schedule strength for a bottom-tier team in the Pac-12, Big Ten, and ACC. They've not ever really played an SEC schedule. And I know it sounds crazy. Well, they're in the SEC. No, they don't. They have not played the same type of schedule that everyone else plays. They just haven't. Now, they won games. Yeah, they've won games. But it's not the same thing. They've gotten Mississippi State as a cross-division rival, and they've been able to avoid playing anyone out of conference. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's not, when you really break it down, it's not as impressive. Like, they have no big wins under Mark Stoops. There's not one signature victory. Not a single one. Eliah Drinkwitz beat Ohio State last year. I know they didn't have Marvin Harrison. I know that. But they still beat them. Mark Stoops never challenges Georgia. Elijah Drinkwitz, two consecutive seasons, had Georgia on the ropes. Two consecutive seasons. He is a decent coach who honestly has just been the byproduct of really smart scheduling from their athletic director. It's not hatred. It's just truth-telling. No one else in the SEC wants to admit it, though, because that's part of the video as well. So for those that don't know, I did a 40-minute expose on this topic. I'll go on forever about this topic. And it sounds like I'm punching down at Kentucky, but no. If I continue to see Mark Stoops being and look, if Texas A&M would have hired Mark Stoops, Kentucky would have gotten out of one of the worst contracts I've ever seen. They gave Mark Stoops a raise, and the next day he lost to Vanderbilt comfortably. A bad Vanderbilt team. But yeah, so Kentucky playing Louisville annually actually helps them because they don't have to do any exotic scheduling at a conference. All right, so I'll get more into the NIL stuff here with Garl here in a second, but look, the way this works, all right, when you're a Power 5 school, you have in the SEC, every year you have to go out and schedule an out-of-conference Power 5 game. All right? It is hard to do that. It's hard. And the thing about that is when you do it, you oftentimes have to schedule home and homes. So half of the time, you've got to fly cross-country. Like LSU, they're having to go to USC or, you know, perfect example, Mississippi State and Arizona. Two teams that have no history. You got to schedule these games. That's a brutal road trip early in the season for both of those teams for a home and home, right? That's part of the reason why we won the Mississippi State game a few years ago, because Mississippi State was tired. They didn't get back till 4 in the morning after they beat Arizona. So if you have Louisville penciled in at the end of the year, well, number one, you're able to schedule the beginning of your season a lot softer. And then number two, it's always a drivable distance for your program. You don't have to worry about exotic road trips ever, ever. Okay, so it's a huge benefit. Huge. But I can go on about this for days. I've never understand why Mark Stoops is viewed as just an unbelievable coach when he's average. Garl wants to talk some NIL. So yeah, you know, I think, you know, I did the video on the SEC channel about the Josh Payton, the alignment comment that he made. And look, last year, and I felt like this is important to add to this discussion. Last year, Josh Payton had LSU behind Oklahoma again. So look, it's his opinion. He's his own man. He's got a huge platform. I'm not going to sit here and tell you LSU's NIL is bad. Because it's not. I mean, it's not. Players are getting paid. You know, it's not. You know, they're doing fine, and they're paying some guys for 2025. I mean, it's fine. Is it as good at other schools? No. Like, it's not as good as what other schools are doing. I mean, at this point, it's going to be really hard for anyone to keep up with Oregon. It's going to be really, really hard. Okay? Really hard. It's going to be really hard to keep up with Texas A&M and Texas, but we've known that. But in a way, Oregon having success also helps LSU because we don't play them unless we play them in the playoff. So, you know, as far as NIL and alignment and all that stuff with LSU, I wouldn't worry too much about it because the 2025 recruiting is still been really good. Let's go to Pegasus. He says, I'm sorry, what has Lane done? Lane Kiffin, 2-10 win seasons at Ole Miss. Now, you could say you can make this some of the same criticisms about Lane as you could make about Stoops, in that Lane has had the easiest cross division rival in the country. Ole Miss going up against Vanderbilt. That is such a huge advantage for them. It's a penciled in victory. But on top of that, you've seen Ole Miss take care of business in the Egg Bowl. You've seen Ole Miss win a big game last year versus LSU. You've seen Ole Miss go on the road and beat Tennessee. I think Ole Miss has done really well. I really, really, really do. And I know with his play calling and offensive mind, I'm always going to have a leg up. Now, does he do all of the play calling? No, he's got an OC. He's got a staff. But would I take Lane Kiffin over Kalen DeBoer right now? I would. I would. Now, Lane Kiffin and Josh Heupel, that's close. That's close if you ask me. I think Josh Heupel is undervalued in many ways. I don't think people quite understand how hard it is to win at Tennessee. Now, I do give Mark Stoops a lot of credit when they had to win the game with Lynn Bowden at quarterback. New Orleans Saints legend, Lynn Bowden, or Bowden. But I'll tell you this, I think me saying Mark Stoops being average is a little overblown, but do I think he's overrated? Yes. He is a good coach, not a great coach. Huge difference. Let's see. That's huge. TAF and Bayou Traditions coming together. Yeah. All right. So, and this kind of goes along with Garl's super chat here. So why is that relevant? Well, in the past, TAF had more to do with athletic fundraising, and Bayou Traditions, which obviously is new, has more to do with NIL, name, image, and likeness, paying players, basically. I think it's a good thing. It just needs to be organized. Like, these things are really tough logistically when it comes to where the cash flow is going. Right? And this is just, and it goes back to our interview with Andy Staples. A lot of boosters they would prefer to have their name put on a building instead of sign this kid and your 100K you're giving to this program is going to go to this kid. So those two coming together, good thing. Good thing. Let's take a few more here. Zadu Mick, good to see you. Tomorrow I'll be mailing a bunch of prizes out. If you've not gotten yours, trust me, it's on the way. And that's true, Chance. Let's see. Oh, this is interesting. This is a Twitter DM from Michael. Carter, would I have taken Paul Skeens? Out of the game today. Now, I do want to show you this. This is kind of making its rounds here. I want you to watch the differences in their routines pregame. So this is Bartolo Colon to the left, and this is Paul Skeens to the right.
Starts with the bands. I don't even know what to call that, but it's got to be something to get his shoulders in alignment. How about the backwards throw with a shot put?
Paul Skeens throws a football before the game. It's crazy. And the Bartolo Colon just does that. Now, I don't know what goes the science behind the Paul Skeens warm-up routine. But that is wild. But for those that didn't know, Paul Skeens threw 7 innings of no-hit baseball today. And they took him out of the game. Because he was at, what, 90-something pitches? And, of course, the analytics say to take him out of the game. But he's throwing a no-hitter. If he's 22 years old, which is what he is now, you let him complete the no-hitter. Now, if he's 28, coming off of a Tommy John surgery, then, yeah, you should pull him. But you got to let Paul Skeens finish a no-hitter. You're the damn Pittsburgh Pirates. Happy 25th to Mick and his wife. who wants to start for All-Star Game Tuesday? Okay. That makes sense. Here's a photo for you. There you go. Lil Wayne, Jaden, and Livy at the ESPYs. Very cool stuff. And his 100 aren't like other pitcher 100 pitchers because he's throwing 100 miles per hour 70% of the time. Now, I've touched on everything I wanted to touch on. I do want to also bring up one quick note. As I've dove deeper into, you know, some game prep things for the upcoming season, I do want to point out that Lenore Sellers, the South Carolina quarterback, is very interesting. He'll be a year one starter, but dual threat quarterback. He's got some wheels. Sal with the other super. Go right on ahead, Sal. Ask another question. I appreciate you, man. Supers have been flying tonight. I appreciate you guys. Mick, welcome to the channel. Who's going to step up at cornerback? All right. One player, and I feel he is really under the radar. And I understand that there are LSU fans that fear the unknown. But Michael Turner is very interesting to me. Here we are, a wide receiver that more than likely will play defensive back at LSU. So, if that's the case, you can make a very strong case that Michael Turner is our fastest corner. He is truly gifted when it comes to speed. Size, not so much. He's just not a big guy. But he's 6 foot. Probably one of the thinner football players we have ever seen at LSU. Okay. Just going to put his On3 profile up there. And you're looking at a blue chip recruit. Now, on three, didn't really like him. They had him at the number 82 ranked wide receiver, but 247 had him at the number 9 wide receiver. Once again, when it comes to just pure speed, he might be the fastest corner on the team right now. He's just not big. He really is tiny when it comes to actual thickness. And I do feel in the SEC, you got to have some thickness to a certain degree. All right. Very interesting player. So that's a deep cut right there. Who's going to step up at corner? But more than likely, you're going to need Zy Alexander to be healthy, which is up in the air at this point. And then you're going to need someone like a Javian Toviano, Ashton Stamps, and PJ Woodland to really carry the group. Now, you do have J.K. Johnson. You do have Jair Brown. You do have some other interesting transfers that have come in. But the name to keep an eye out for is Michael Turner. Very deep cut. Here's Chance. He says, John Curtis doesn't throw the ball, so he's hard to rate, which is true. It's also a hard rating because, you know, most viewed him as a wide receiver, but now he is a corner, which is very interesting. Let's go to Sal Super. And Sal Supered. Let me see. How will Perkins stack up against the run game behind weaker defensive tackles if they have him in the middle? Do you think he'll get washed out a lot? It's a good question. So, was that Epic Shorty? Bullfrog retorts, who says Guillory and Paez are weak? My retort to you, Bullfrog, is how do we know for sure Guillory and Paez will be the starters? I think it's safe to say that those two have a high likelihood of starting. But Suggs coming in from Grand Valley State could play a lot. Obviously, Dominic McKinley could play a lot. You know, there's a question about chemo a little bit earlier. But it is a good question, Sal, because it is a very interesting defensive tackle group, to say the least. On paper, it's definitely the most questionable group that LSU has had in quite some time. And then you have a linebacker duo behind it that's new. Now, they aren't new players. They're experienced players. Greg Penn coming up here in year four, Harold Perkins coming up here in year three. But those two at those two positions have rarely played next to one another. They've been on the field together a lot, but it's different than playing together and starting together. So yeah, it's going to be a leap of faith. But we know Harold Perkins is a playmaker. We know athletically, instinctually, he'll be fine. It's just size, right? He's just not the biggest, longest guy out there. Pause. But I think for me, I think Perk is going to figure it out because he has Blake Baker coaching him. And I think LSU's defensive tackles will be better than we probably think because Bo Davis is coaching him. And, you know, it's a leap of faith, Sal. Trust me, I've thought about it quite a bit as well. And because you can't really tackle in practice anymore, you really don't know. You really don't. You know, you pray and hope that two players that we rarely talk about at defensive tackle come out of the woodwork and give you some snaps. One is Sean Washington, who had some rough snaps during the spring. But Sean Washington was recruited at Georgia, played at Georgia. And then you also have Jalen Lee, who's barely played, but he's still there. Former four-star recruit, Louisiana native. Size-wise, he's SEC material. He's just not really played. But they're not being discussed really at all at this point. It's amazing. You go on Facebook, and I looked at the same thing I shared with you earlier. I have to stay off Facebook. I mean, I still stream on Facebook, but man. Yeah, I get so sick and tired of people saying, well, Mason Taylor didn't take that leap in year two. And I'm like, wait, did you actually watch the games? You know, it's okay if you say a wide receiver who didn't catch a lot of passes didn't take a leap. But how did the wide receiver block? Tight end blocking matters even more. And anyone that actually watched the games, you know, Mason Taylor was a big part of our blocking. qualified to rank position groups. Quarterback, wide receiver, tight end, OLDO, LBDB, 1 through 7. Chance, that's a good question. I know he's been to LSU games because, well, I was able to spend time with him at one of the LSU games. One of the coolest moments of my career. If I were to rank the position groups, obviously I would put offensive line number one, and that's rare. I mean, I don't know how many times at LSU you can even say that, but I think offensive line would have to be number one. And if, once again, if there is one thing you can say that Brian Kelly has done better than any coach, it is at LSU. It is coach the offensive line. He has been so good at that. And Les Miles was a good offensive line coach as well, as a head coach. But, man, Brian Kelly is really taking it to another level. So I would say offensive line's got to be number one. And then number two, I would say, if you want to group tight ends with wide receiver, I would say that. And then number three, I would probably say quarterback. And then number four, I would probably say running back. And then defense, that's where it gets tough. It's not great that, you know, I would have all the back three here be defensive positions. But if I had to do it, I would order them in that order. Defensive line one, linebacker two, defensive back three. I could put LB one, defensive line two, DB three, or LB one, DB two, DL three. So there you go. Now, in the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'm going to take as many as we possibly can. Apparently, the ESPYs has been like all Louisiana. I showed you some stuff earlier, so I'm going to go watch it. They had a huge Steve Gleason thing, so I definitely want to watch that. But Flaje performed. I definitely want to watch that. I would play it for you, but I would get booted off YouTube. Let's go to this. We actually started the live stream talking about Josh Williams. We had a super chat. So I won't go too deep into it. And the super chat was exactly this, Mac. So when I'm done, just go to the very beginning and watch it. But long story short, I think Josh could be the RB1 this year. Bullfrog says, extremely hot take. I see LSU completely blowing out USC. Going in and call him insane. Yeah, it's just a bad take. Bad take. I think it's just hard to say that at this point. I can't get there. Now, I could get there if I knew Alex Grinch was their DC still. Because the last time Alex Grinch faced an LSU offense, he gave up 63 points. But I like the DC hire that they made. We're going to be ready for simulated pressures. That's what DeAnton Lynn is known for. He's good at getting after the quarterback. Monty Kiffin. One thing that's interesting, you know, when it comes to the the recruiting is so we talked about the Louisiana three star, the allure of the Louisiana three star, but there is a piece of me, and some of this is anecdotal, but I also see it in the NFL draft. The recruiting services have just gotten better. They've just gotten better. Now, I say that, but then, you know, On3 in particular, they love to boost LSU recruits. And I think it could mean one of two things. Number one, LSU has good scouting, especially now with the new defensive coaching. Because, I mean this, a lot of LSU recruits have gone up recently. But the second thing I would also say is no matter what their methods are, especially 247, because they've been in it longer than On3, they've just gotten better. They've just gotten better at identifying who the best players are. Let's see. Let's see. Yeah, that's the thing, Burgess, about the 6'6 receiver. We talked about that. I mean, the third straight year they brought in a 6'6 guy. And doesn't include Kylan Billiard, who's also big. 42-24 final score for LSU, so you like the over. There you go. Now, that'll do it for me. Once again, big thanks to NOPOD. Shout out again to the NoOffseason.com Sports Card Network. NoOffseason, NoOffseason.com. Check it out. And we'll talk to you soon. We will probably have a Jace Thomas video for Saturday, so be on the lookout for that. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. Chance, let's not do that peace sign. Okay, that's a USC sign. Big shout out to Blanche, Jared, Garl, and Sal. J-Red, our top super chatter. We had a few Venmos today as well from LA Mom and the great J-Red. And tonight, oh, we're doing some Nashville hot chicken. Let's go. Let's go.